Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're really getting into the essentials of Daniel Pink's quite foundational book, A Whole New Mind.
Yeah, it's foundational is the right word. Published back in 2005, believe it or not.
And it really set the stage for how we think, even now, about the future of work. Honestly, the message feels even more urgent today, doesn't it?
It really does. Pink's core idea was, that we were moving out of the information age, you know, the age dominated by logical, analytical, what he calls left-brain thinking.
And heading into something new, the conceptual age.
Exactly.
Okay, let's unpack that a bit for everyone listening. For, gosh, decades, right? If you were good with numbers or code or legal documents, those L-directed skills, you were pretty much set.
That was the path. Logic, sequence analysis.
But Pink made this really provocative claim back then that these skills, while still necessary, absolutely, they just aren't enough anymore. Not for real success, not for staying ahead.
Necessary but not sufficient, that's the phrase. And that's really our mission today, isn't it? To figure out what is sufficient now.
Right. If you're listening and maybe worried about AI or seeing automation creep into your field, this deep dive is kind of your roadmap.
We need to identify those skills, the R-directed capabilities Pink talks about. The ones that, aren't easily turned into code or shipped overseas. The truly human skills.
Before we get to the skills themselves, let's talk about the author Daniel H. Pink, because his background is, pretty unique for this kind of thinker.
It really is. He's a Yale Law School grad, for one, and he was also chief speechwriter for Vice President Al Gore. Not your typical career path for someone writing about the future of work and creativity.
No, definitely not. And I think that specific mix, the legal training, the political comms, that's what makes his perspective so powerful. Well, he's not, a lab coat researcher doing primary studies. He's a synthesizer. A master synthesizer, actually.
Right. He connects the dots.
Exactly. He's got that analytical rigor, maybe from the law background, but also the storytelling skill from speech writing. He pulls together economics, psychology, neuroscience.
And makes it make sense for, for everyone. Makes it actionable.
And what's amazing is the timing. He saw this shift happening way back in the mid-2000s.
Before the iPhone really took off. Before AI was this constant headline.
Yeah. He articulated how the value was shifting away from pure analysis towards synthesis, creativity. Empathy. He gave us a language for it early on.
Okay, so let's look at the book itself, A Whole New Mind. It's part warning, part guide, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. He frames it through these big economic ages, you know, agricultural, then industrial.
And then the information age, the time of the knowledge worker.
And now, he argues, we're deep into the conceptual age, the age of creators and empathizers.
And this isn't just some slow drift. He says it's driven by three massive forces hitting us all at once. The three A's, he calls them.
Right. The forces that are making those purely logical, routine, L-directed skills less valuable.
Okay. So the first A is abundance. What's that about?
It's basically that in many parts of the world, our basic material needs are met. We have enough stuff. So mere function isn't enough anymore.
We don't just need a phone that works.
Exactly. We want one that looks beautiful, feels good, maybe says something about us. Think about design, aesthetics, the experience. Abundance shifts consumer demand towards meaning and beauty, not just utility.
Utility is just the entry ticket now.
Pretty much. Then the second A, Asia. This was huge back in 2005, the idea that routine analytical work, basic coding, accounting tasks, data entry, could be done by skilled workers elsewhere, often for less money.
Outsourcing of knowledge work.
Yeah. If a task follows a set pattern, a kind of script.
It's potentially outsourceable. Though thinking about it now, that's evolved too, hasn't it? We see incredible innovation coming from Asia now, not just routine work.
That's a really good point. It shows the principle still holds, but maybe the geography isn't the key factor anymore. It's the type of work. Is it routine? Is it rule-based?
Which leads perfectly into the third A, automation. This one feels incredibly current.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Software, AI, getting better and better at doing logical, rule-based tasks. Think tax software, legal discovery tools, even some medical diagnostics.
Anything that can be broken down into an if-then process.
Right. The algorithm can often do it faster, cheaper, sometimes even more accurately. That puts huge pressure on jobs based purely on those L-directed skills.
Okay, so abundance, Asia, automation. The pressure is on. What's the solution then? What skills do we need?
This is where Pink introduces the R-directed aptitudes. The skill's more associated with the right hemisphere of the brain, though obviously it's more complex than just left-right brain. But it's a useful metaphor.
It is, and these skills fall into two main categories, right?
Yes. High concept and high touch.
High concept. That's about seeing patterns, creating new things, combining ideas.
Exactly. Big picture thinking, artistic creation, emotional resonance. And high touch is about empathy, understanding human interaction, finding purpose, connecting.
And this leads to one of his most famous lines, or ideas at least, the MFA becoming the new MBA.
Yeah, the Master of Fine Arts replacing the Master of Business Administration. It sounds provocative, maybe a bit hyperbolic.
A little.
But the point is powerful. The skills traditionally associated with the arts, creativity, synthesis, design, empathy, are becoming essential for business survival and success, not just nice extras.
So we need this whole new mind that integrates both sides.
That's the core idea.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the six specific senses he identifies that make up this R-directed mind. You want to kick off with the high concept ones?
Sure. So the first three are really about creation and synthesis. First up is design.
And again, not just making things look good.
No, it's deeper. It's about combining utility with significance, making something work well and resonate emotionally or aesthetically. Think Apple products or even how Target elevated design in everyday items.
Right. Good design isn't an afterthought. It's fundamental. It creates desire, commands a premium. Utility alone doesn't cut it in an age of abundance.
Okay, second sense. Story.
Ah, this one's crucial. We're drowning in information, data points, facts.
Facts are everywhere, almost free.
Exactly. But what makes information stick? What persuades people? What gives facts meaning? It's narrative. Story.
So it's not just for novelists.
Not at all. Pick argues everyone needs to be a storyteller now. Doctors explaining diagnoses, entrepreneurs pitching ideas, managers motivating teams. You need to weave facts into a compelling narrative. To connect, to persuade, to be memorable.
Makes sense. Data dumps just don't work. Okay, third high concept sense, symphony.
I love this one. It's the opposite of hyper-specialization.
Yeah.
The information age loved analysis, breaking things down. Symphony is about putting things together.
Synthesis over analysis.
Yes. Seeing the big picture, connecting seemingly unrelated ideas, combining existing things in new ways. It's about seeing relationships, patterns.
Can you give an example?
Think about maybe the founder of Southwest Airlines, combining the efficiency model of bus travel with air travel. Or a product manager who merges insights from data analytics and customer interviews to create something truly innovative. It's about crossing boundaries.
Got it. So design, story, symphony, those are the high concept senses about creating and connecting ideas. What about the other three, the high touch ones?
Right. These next three pivot more towards human connection, meaning, and, well, intuition, perhaps.
They feel more interpersonal.
Exactly. The fourth sense is empathy. Being able to step into someone else's shoes, understand their feelings, connect with them emotionally.
Which seems obvious as a human virtue, but Pink argues it's now a crucial professional skill.
Absolutely critical. Think about it. Machines can process data, maybe even diagnose problems. Hmm. But can they show genuine care? Can they build trust through understanding?
Not really. Not in the same way.
So it feels like sales, management, healthcare, education, anywhere. Human interaction is key. Mm. Empathy is the differentiator. So it builds relationships, ensures patient compliance, drives team cohesion.
He mentions doctors studying art to become better observers.
Yeah, things like that. Training empathy isn't soft stuff anymore. It's hardcore professional development for the conceptual age because empathy is very difficult to automate or outsource effectively.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the fifth sense?
Play.
Play. Like games and fun. How does that fit in?
Well, we tend to think of play as the opposite of serious work, right? Frivolous.
Yeah. Work is serious. Play is for after work.
Pink flips that.
Yeah.
He argues that humor, games, laughter, lightheartedness, they're actually essential for creativity, innovation, and even psychological well-being at work.
How so?
Play encourages experimentation, risk-taking without high stakes. It helps us think outside the box. Approach problems from different angles. Think about brainstorming sessions that use improv games or companies incorporating gamification into training.
So it's not just about employee perks like a ping pong table.
No, it's about fostering a culture where non-linear thinking and joy can actually boost productivity and innovation. Mm. It's serious business, ironically.
Interesting. Okay, that leaves one more sense, the sixth one.
And perhaps the deepest.
Meaner. The search for a purpose.
Exactly. Pink argues that as abundance meets our material needs, we increasingly seek purpose, significance, transcendence in our lives. And this search, profoundly affects the economy.
How does it affect the economy?
People want to work for organizations that have a purpose beyond profit. They want to buy products from brands that align with their values. They make career choices based on fulfillment, not just salary.
So businesses need to think about their why.
Absolutely. Providing a sense of meaning for employees, for customers, is becoming an economic imperative. It drives loyalty, attracts talent, and builds brands that last. Think about the rise of B Corp, or mission-driven startups.
Wow. Okay, so those are the six senses: design, story, symphony, empathy, play, and meaning. That's quite a shift from just logic and analysis.
It really is. And if we zoom out a bit, what are the big takeaways here? What should you, listening now, really grasp from this?
Well, I think three key themes really stand out for me. First, and this is crucial, it's about integration, not abandonment.
Right. It's not saying forget logic.
Not at all. Pink is very clear. This is an anti-left brain. It's pro-whole brain. The goal is to integrate analytical thinking with these R-directed skills.
So if you're an engineer, learn about user experience, maybe storytelling for presentations. If you're a designer, understand the business metrics.
Exactly. Become more T-shaped. Strong in your core discipline, but able to connect across others. It's about adding, not subtracting.
Okay, integration. What's the second theme?
The economic value of soft skills. These abilities, empathy, storytelling, design thinking, seeing the big picture, they used to be dismissed, right, as soft or nice to have.
Definitely secondary to the hard skills of analysis or coding.
Pink argues that hierarchy is flipping. Because these soft skills are harder to automate and outsource, they are becoming the source of real competitive advantage and premium value. They're now must-haves.
They are what make you uniquely valuable in the face of the three A's.
Precisely. Which leads to the third theme, which is maybe the most sobering, the obsolescence of the routine knowledge worker.
Oof. Yeah, that's a strong statement.
But it follows logically. If your job primarily involves tasks that can be reduced to a script, a formula, a set of repeatable steps.
Like those old factory jobs.
Then it's vulnerable. Routine analytical work is becoming the new blue-collar work, susceptible to being done cheaper by software or workers elsewhere.
So developing these uniquely human high-concept and high-touch skills isn't just nice for personal growth. It's essential for career survival, for longevity.
It really is. If your value proposition can be boiled down to an algorithm, you need to evolve.
Pink really does have a way with words, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He captures these big ideas so memorably.
He does. Some lines just stick with you.
We should probably share a few of those key quotes or ideas, like summarizing who thrives now. The future belongs to a very different kind of person, with a very different kind of mind creators and empathizers, pattern recognizers and meaning makers.
That sums it up perfectly. That's the profile for the conceptual age.
And explaining why things like beauty matter more now because of that first A. Abundance has satisfied the material needs of millions of people, boosting the significance of beauty, spirituality, and emotion.
That connects the economic force directly to the shift in values, why design matters, why meaning matters.
And that stark warning about commodity skills. A skill becomes a commodity when it can be reduced to a set of rules, and anything that becomes a commodity gets squeezed on price, on wages, on everything.
That's the economic logic right there. If it's just rules, the value gets competed away. Powerful stuff.
So, okay, this all sounds compelling, maybe a bit daunting. What can people listening actually do with this? How do you apply it?
Well, Pink gives practical advice. First, he suggests doing a sort of conceptual age audit of your own job.
What does that involve?
Basically, sit down and list your daily tasks. Which ones are primarily L-directed routine analysis, following procedures, and which are R-directed persuading, seeing connections, empathizing, designing.
Yeah, the goal is
to consciously try and shift more of your time and energy towards developing and using those R-directed skills. Find ways to add layers of creativity, empathy, or synthesis to your existing role.
So if you're, say, a software engineer, maybe get involved in user interface design, or practice explaining complex technical concepts using stories.
Exactly. Or if you're an accountant, focus more on the advisory side, building relationships, understanding the client's bigger picture, not just crunching the numbers. Actively cultivate those complementary skills.
What about beyond our own jobs, like education?
Oh, big implications there. Pink is a huge advocate for integrating arts and humanities into STEM fields. You know, STEAM, not just STEM.
Science, tech, engineering, arts, math.
Right. We need to teach kids synthesis, not just analysis. How to tell stories, how to collaborate, how to think creatively and non-linearly. Art class isn't just fun, it's essential preparation for the future economy.
And for personal growth.
Yeah.
Just generally trying to live a whole new mind life.
Use the six senses as a guide. Make a conscious effort. Visit an art gallery or a museum to sharpen your design eye. Keep a journal to practice story. Volunteer to cultivate empathy. Play board games or try improv or play. Reflect on your purpose for meaning. Find ways to connect dots in your hobbies for symphony.
Make it intentional.
Yes. Treat these art-directed skills as muscles that need exercise.
You know, what really struck me rereading this is how surprisingly optimistic it feels. We hear so much doom and gloom about automation taking jobs. But Pink frames it as an opportunity.
Right.
An opportunity to become, well, more fully human in our work. To bring back the creativity, the play, the empathy that maybe got squeezed out in the purely rational information age.
That's a great point. It's not about becoming less human to compete with machines, but becoming more human, tapping into the skills machines can't replicate.
It makes the path forward feel, well, actually kind of exciting.
Yeah.
More fulfilling, potentially.
I think that's the lasting insight for me, too. Success and fulfillment in this conceptual age really do require integrating both sides, the logic and the emotion, the analysis and the artistry, developing that whole new mind.
It's not about left versus right brain.
No, it's about the whole brain working together. And ultimately, the message is that the way to stay relevant, the way to thrive, is to lean into our fundamental humanity, our ability to create, to connect, to find meaning, to understand each other, to become, as you said, wonderfully and complexly more human.
A powerful thought indeed. And a hopeful one to end on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.